And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2298. And Kim, would you like to state the general nature of this resolution and explain the effect of any proposed amendments that we know about?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2298 modifies the population unemployment rate and county per capita income requirements for qualified locations which business firms may locate to qualify for small business development income tax exemptions. Permits business firms locating facilities in certain ports to qualify for small business development income tax exemption and creates new standards by which county average income is measured for purposes of satisfying certain employment requirements applicable to enterprise zone property tax exemptions. I will not endeavor to explain the amendments because Representative Greg Smith will be here to do that. However, the last two parts of that are proposed to go away and be changed slightly by the amendments.
Okay, thank you. Do you know if Representative Smith is going to come up with or separate? Okay. Well, I'd like to begin with calling our Representative Tom Butler to the witness desk, and you know the drill. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Butler. I represent House District 60, which, as I mentioned before, is the most rural piece of Oregon. And thank you very much. We don't need a lot more folks there. We just need jobs. The difference between being successful in House District 60 and not being successful is to bring jobs to rural Oregon. And it's my great pleasure. And I've had a number of people say, are you coming incognito? Why do you continue to wear
that was
beef? It's what's
question.
For dinner. Members of the, let me just tell you one quick story of what's happening in my district today as we speak. The Oregon Youth Authority is closing out a facility which they built for millions of dollars in Burns, Oregon. And this is one of four facilities slated for closure and or some significant modification. And it represents 61 jobs in Burns, Oregon. Now, Burns, Oregon is not a large place. It's a beautiful place to live, a beautiful place to come and visit and to enjoy the recreation out of doors. But if the equivalent jobs were lost in any single industry in the Portland metropolitan area, one employer would pull out of metropolitan area equaling 8,755 jobs. And I submit to you that you would probably bend over backwards and lay in front of an army tank before you would allow a business to pull out that had 8,755 jobs. That's the equivalent loss which we're being exposed to today as the OIA pulls out of rural eastern Oregon, that one facility in Burns. And thus, because I represent more cows than I represent people in Harney County, I want you to know that we can only make this up to those people by eating lots and lots of Harney County beef. Four times a day would be fine, thank you very much. So beef, it's what's for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and twice in addition to that. thank you very much for the opportunity of coming forward to testify just briefly relative to House Bill 2298. House Bill 2298 does a number of things, but it the one thing it does do is it cleans up some things which we had been able to accomplish last session. Recognize that it has a couple of parts to the bill, and I won't testify as to all of what it does, and Representative Smith is prepared to come forward. I want you to know that I have the support. I do support and the changes that Representative Smith will be making, and it's my understanding that the OECDD is in support of these changes and modifications as we have presented them. Last session, we had a small cities investment program bill, which was somewhat complex. It was somewhat complex because what it did was it shifted away from local property tax owners, local property taxpayers, and local property tax system. It shifted away and allowed new to Oregon business that wasn't in Oregon already, wasn't in rural Oregon, wasn't in metropolitan area, but Oregon, but new to Oregon business to come to Oregon and bring 10 or more full-time employees, giving them full-time wages as defined in the bill. And if they would do that, then they could pay up to $500, I believe it was, that to certify with the OECDD, and then $100 annually to certify that they were still continuing to employ not less than 10 full-time employees. This bill was passed, and we found that there wasn't a great deal of appetite to move businesses to Fossil, Oregon, and Monument, and some of those other places that qualify qualified. It has some very specific and continues to have some very specific modifiers and qualifiers in the legislation. What this legislation does is, number one, it allows a little bit larger town, going from 10 to 15,000, so that the modest-sized towns in rural Oregon could qualify for this new to Oregon employment opportunity. And the other thing that it does is that it allows some of the criteria to expand. We were using two separate different qualifiers. One dealt with the per capita income in the county, and the other dealt with the unemployment. And the difficulty that we were having was that if we have the lowest quartile of unemployment, those nine counties would be within the lowest quartile, and then the lowest per capita income, and that's produced only annually, then what happens is that the one is produced annually, the other moves fairly rapidly. What this does is it gives the amendments today allow the department an opportunity to fix these for a little bit longer time so that they can target an industry to come to one of these small rural communities to bring new jobs to this particular type of community. And so you'll see that it expands the size from one quartile to one-third of those counties that have the high unemployment. Now, it's anticipated that over time what may happen is that a county which is targeted and lands, let's say that if you landed 10 new jobs in one of the communities that's listed on the list here, let me just pick one out, Granite or Lostine or Long Creek and Grant County. If you landed 10 new jobs in one of those communities, what you would do is, first of all, you would significantly change the per capita income, and the second thing that you would do is that you would change the unemployment ratio within that county. So it's anticipated that this will both grow the per capita income as well as to reduce and shrink the amount of unemployment within a county. Then the other thing that became evident early on, and I need to confess to you now, is that we modeled the bill and fashioned the bill. Some folks were very interested from Thousand Friends of Oregon that we not allow businesses to expand out into areas where they really didn't need to be or where we didn't want them. And I was very sensitive to that, and consequently we said in the first bill, we said only within city limits, because it was anticipated that within city limits could those services, industrial services that are normally provided for these small businesses, which they need, water and sewer and those kinds of things, would only be allowed in city limits. The first thing we found out right away was that much of the industrial property for these small towns is located right adjacent to the city limits and is not part of the city limits, but is served by those utilities. And so this was a flaw. It was a fatal flaw in the case of Lakeview City. Unfortunately, we had some folks lined up that were very interested in Lakeview City to move into the big factory in the plant there, which is vacant from the old mill town operation that they used to be, but couldn't move in because this bill provided it had to be within the city limits in order to receive this particular benefit. I think this will cure and overcome that defect by allowing those areas within the industrial zoned areas that are served by the utilities to go ahead and have an opportunity to expand. And finally, the issue came up that we did have places that might, and we did find that this did happen to in Morrow County, might have ports that had certain industrially served property that could benefit these folks and bring them into a port. And this, without you've got some amendments to actually pull the word port out and to insert in the language that would take into consideration land that is zoned for industrial use, so that it's anticipated that these city services or those municipal services would serve these particular areas. With that, I do want to let you know that I do appreciate the good work which the OECD has given and the thoughtful consideration they've had in moving this forward. I do appreciate the work that they are doing in helping us to strive to bring some unemployment figures down in rural Oregon and some true jobs back to rural Oregon. And this isn't just for the counties of eastern Oregon. This affects some of our counties, coastal counties in southern Oregon as well. And I appreciate the work that they're doing. And then I also appreciate the good work that Representative Greg Smith is doing in this regard, because he represents a goodly portion of those areas of the state right now that and has represented them that qualify for some of these important tax credits. So with that, I'll be happy to try and answer any questions, and please eat more beef.
Thank you, Representative Butler. I think I do my share. I raise beef.
Harney County beef.
Any questions from the committee on Representative Butler?
Thank you very much.
You explained it very well. Thank you. Representative Greg Smith, would you like to come up? It certainly would. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Smith, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, I'm State Representative Greg Smith, representing District 57, which makes up four counties of Union, Wallowa, Moro, and the landmass of Umatilla County. I'm pleased to be here today to speak on behalf of House Bill 2298. On the right is Mr. Ron Herbison, who works in my office and has really played a key role in helping move this legislation forward, and I hope it'd be okay with the chair to have him speak to a part of this. And then to my left is Mr. Gary Neal, who's the general manager at the Port of Moro, commonly referred to in Eastern Oregon as Mr. Economic Development. Uh-huh. And so it's our pleasure to have him here. House Bill 2298 really is the brainchild of Representative Tom Butler. This is a pro-economic development piece of legislation that's desperately needed throughout rural Oregon. It's going to allow small communities to actively participate in the recruitment of business that is so essential to reducing the unemployment rate in rural Oregon. It's a piece of legislation that's going to bring good family wage jobs to communities that are going to be able to step up, and folks will be able to buy homes and through the property taxes support community services and participate in the schools and participate in community events. And I'm pleased to be part of this legislation. We do have a couple amendments we'd like to present that would, we believe, bring this bill even further along and make it a stronger bill. These are amendments that we have discussed with the folks from the special districts and from the Oregon Public Ports Association, and at this point they're not telling us they have too much heartburn over any of these, and if it'd be all right, I'd like to be able to present those to you as well. Would that
we
be okay?
We have them here.
You do have them there?
Yeah.
I think Representative Butler did a very good job in talking about this. We do want to modify the language port to read residents and delete or land that is owned for industrial use. And then also we want to introduce some amendments that ensure the good family wage jobs are being created. The way the current legislation is written, it would allow annual compensation to be perhaps a little lower than we think it ought to be. We think if a firm's going to be coming into a community and providing special consideration, that they ought to be willing to step up and create good family wage jobs, and part of our language would require that. So with that said, if it's all right, Madam Chair,
sure.
Mr. Herbison can explain a little further about the amendments.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Herbison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The first amendment that we are proposing, I'd like to go to 2298-3. It deals with the first part of the bill, which is the city small business tax exemption. The current language of the bill is kind of unclear. Right now, it implies that a qualified location means any area within an urban growth boundary of a port with fewer than 15,000 residents, which that language is very unclear. We want to change that language and to, as the amendment shows, to delete port on line 17 and after residence insert or land that is zoned for industrial use. This language does include port, and that's why we are throughout the rest of the bill 2298 proposing that port be deleted from that language as well, because it is included under the qualified language or qualified location. The question that arises is this industrial zone land throughout the state? This is not. This you still have to meet the requirements. You still have to meet the requirements of ORS 285B105, which is the preliminary certification requirements, as well as you have to be, if you are outside the UGB of a city of residents of 15,000 or less, you still have to be in a county that has employment rates that is in the highest quartile as well for unemployment rates, as well as in the lowest third of per capita personal income. The second amendment we're proposing, 2298-2, deals with the enterprise zone property tax exemption. The current language in the bill will change the property tax, employment requirements or the employment compensation requirements for the eligibility of this tax exemption. The current language will change it from we'll change it to county per capita personal income from the county's annual average wage. We would like to keep it at the county's annual average wage because of what it will do to the requirements required for compensation. If you look at one of the diagrams shown to you, you can see how the like for Morrow County, it drops it down to $27,000 for compensation. Now, compensation includes benefits. When you include benefits into that number, that does not provide a good family wage job. And so those are the reasons why we are proposing these amendments.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. Can you help clarify the what is a good living wage job for the district? And looking at this from Washington County, our average income is much higher, and I'd love for you to clarify what a good family wage job with benefits would be.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos.
Thank you. Gallegos. Get it right.
It's
easy as Smith, is it?
It is. No. But with all due respect, you know, I should be smart enough now to say Madam Vice Chair. if it would be okay, I'd prefer to defer that question to Mr. Gary Neal.
Let me interrupt just a second. Maybe everyone could go to this, the effects of House Bill. It's in your handout, and that's what he's found. Go ahead, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you want me to just kind of address that particular question at this time? If you look at that chart, you can see that the average family wage, the first column that you have, I believe, is 150% of the average family wage of each one of those counties. So in Morrow County, I believe that would be $40,939 is 150% of what the average family wage is in Morrow County. So I believe that would bring it down to somewhere around $27,000 is the average family wage, or $26,000. And I guess those are the difference between if you took in the next column over, if you have $27,000 as the per capita income, that would be, including benefits, that would be about a $10 an hour, equal to about a $10 an hour wage. And we're looking for, personally, you know, in Morrow County, we're looking for a higher wage level than that. It would be in the $15 plus as kind of, if you ran the numbers, at least for an average family wage. And then if you took 150%, I believe that's the criteria to be eligible for the income tax exemption that's in the current legislation. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
It does. Thank you.
Go ahead. Continue. Was he done? Was Mr. Herbison done? Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Neal.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Morrow. We're a countywide port district in Morrow County, and we are involved in economic development. So when I was visiting with Representative Smith about this particular legislation that was passed last session, I thought, man, this is, it looks like a great tool and opportunity to promote economic development in the area we serve. Unfortunately, we saw a fairly specific restriction as it related to the port's industrial recruitment efforts, and so that's what prompted the HB 2298 in discussions with Representative Smith. The port has several acres of industrial zone properties that are outside the UGB and the urban growth boundaries and the city limits within Morrow County. We also have an industrial park down in the south end of our county near Heppner that's outside the urban growth boundary as well. And there's a lot of locations in rural Oregon that are old mill sites that have a lot of buildings that have been abandoned, and those are some of the basic areas, in my opinion, that a lot of communities in rural areas are going to have to try to figure out how to offer up incentives and opportunities to attract business and industry, because we're off the beaten path typically, and we have to offer something to encourage those potential businesses to consider locating there. And usually that means existing buildings as well, and that's in a lot of instances that's what we're looking at in those type of facilities. Because of the restriction of inside the city limits, it just makes it almost very limited to be able to promote those industrial locations that we have potentially available. So we had suggested in as it related to Morrow County, that's how come originally the discussion evolved around port properties, but in reality, we believe that the industrial property classification is a lot more appropriate, because there's a lot of counties in our region that do not have port districts, and so that wasn't the intent to just restrict it to port-owned properties or port properties. It was for any industrial zone property and that meet the primary criteria that's that we're facing here today. And I think that you know, with the economic situation that we have in Oregon, and in particular with the efforts that we try to make in trying to attract industry and businesses, I know in Malheur County, where Representative Butler has some district properties, they're right on the Idaho border, and it's very difficult to compete against Idaho. And this tool, I know, will assist them in their efforts to compete with Idaho. And with Port of Morrow, we compete on a regular basis with the Tri-Cities in Washington, and it's unfortunately we need all the tools we can in the economic development recruitment business. It's not uncommon for most businesses and industries to think they want to locate on the I-5 corridor, and there's nothing wrong with that, except for I-5 doesn't reach out to Eastern Oregon, and so we have that difficulty in trying to overcome. So these tools for assistance are very important to us to try to I guess build a better mousetrap to work with trying to consider creating these jobs that we desperately need. I guess also our Morrow County Judge Terry Tomlin is in the audience, and along with him is his economic development person, Martin Davis. And Judge Tomlin asked me to share with you that they strongly support this effort as well. So I guess with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I thank you for the time.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Neal? Wow, you guys make it easy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're coming together. Signed up, we have Mike Burton and Art Fish from the Oregon Economic Development. If you'd like to come forward. Thank you.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Economic and Community Development Department. This is Art Fish, who, among other things, is our expert in enterprise zones. We're here to testify in support of the bill. As Representative Butler explained, it was a new program enacted by the last legislature, and probably like every other new program, there were some unforeseen wrinkles. We've met with the the communities that are currently eligible for this and discuss with them what they saw as barriers to implementation of the program, and have actually included a number of those in a bill that we're sending forward, which is House Bill 2299, which you should be seeing before too long. This bill addresses some of those. We had some concerns, and basically they're going away with the amendments. But I'll touch on them just to clarify what we think were the issues and what is being done about them. One, as Representative Butler pointed out, the original limitation to city limits was too restrictive. Excuse me. The proposal in here to make it urban growth boundary is much improved. We even support the amendments that would expand that to ex-urban, outside of the city limits, industrially zoned land. We'd want to make it clear that, like any business incentive program, the law would not change the land use of those sites. So we're not circumventing the land use process in Oregon. The amendment, as we understand it, addresses existing industrially zoned sites. So we find that to be an improvement in the program. Additionally, we were concerned about the inclusion of port specifically as it related to urban growth boundaries, because we weren't sure what that was and thought it was potentially headed for confusion, and appreciate the amendment out of port because it eliminates that problem. Additionally, the pages that are being removed by the
dash two
amendments would have related these new terms and conditions to the older and more extensive enterprise zone program, and we don't believe that was the intention. Clarified that with the sponsors of the amendments and the bill, and so support those changes. I would only add one more point, and that's related to the question of per capita income. These are counties which, by definition, have unemployment at the highest end of the state, the highest end of the measure for the state. At this time, that means they're all at or above just about 10%. I would argue that in that sort of an environment, any job is a good job. We need to focus on soaking up the slack in the labor market. And while it's not a large argument and is in fact not relevant to the Small Cities Investment Program, because that program continues on page 2 of the bill, if I could show you the line if you care, continues to include per capita income as the standard for compliance with incentive. And I just wanted to point that out, because I think it's important in those sorts of labor markets that we do everything we can to help people find a way to get a leg up. I'm going to turn the mic over to Mr. Fish, who's going to talk about the handouts that he prepared that you're looking at, and we can explain. One of them, and to me, is a little bit confusing, so we'll let Art tell you what's on those documents.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Arthur Fish with the Economic and Community Development Department. It's a pleasure to be here, and I don't know if there's a whole lot more I can say. As I was watching Representative Butler's hands in the air, I think he captured one of my charts very well. So I'm just going to kind of breeze through them and invite you to interrupt me and ask questions after I'm done, and we'll see whatever curiosity we can stay for you. The first one here just quickly lists first the cities that are currently covered by the Small City Business Development Income Tax Exemption. And you'll see on our enterprise zone map, we've shaded the applicable counties, all four of them, in a sort of orangey color. And these here on this column are listed those cities therein, where within the corporate limits this exemption is presently applicable. Here are the numbers of cities for which the urban growth boundary would be a sufficient encompassing boundary, I guess, within which the company could receive this exemption in, I think it'd be almost 9 different counties for this benefit, plus the industrially zoned areas within those counties too. Then on the far end, just as a matter of reference, is the aspect of how this HB 2299 would make changes too. It wouldn't add quite as many towns, but it would extend the period one more year that area could be in there, giving a little more predictability, but that's another issue for another day. Okay, the next one is sort of this two-piece job, which will give you an idea, I guess, of how an area or a county gets qualified. Shaded here, and you know, I've got it in nice multicolors. The shaded counties there are the four that currently use the program in the sort of the upper right corner. So you might notice that Sherman, Morrow, Lake, and Crook are shaded because they fall in both columns. And the columns are listing the annual unemployment rate and the annual per capita income sorted from worst to best. So way down there at the bottom are some of the counties in western Oregon that have maintained fairly low unemployment and fairly high income. At the top are the ones that qualify for this program that began last session. And if you meet both, if you're in both groups, that top quartile or that worst quartile, then you're in, and your cities are in. The bill before you would reduce the cutoff for personal per capita income from quartile to a third. So you'd grab a couple more counties there that if they're also here, and that's how Willow and Grant County would be added, and then another year data. We would pull another year's data from the year before, and if they made it in that year, then they would still be in the program regardless. So we grab over there in terms of these bolded, underlined counties, three more, Harney, Wheeler, and Malheur. And then just for your reference, I've got, you know, sort of the rest of the counties in the state where Oregon and the U.S. Compare in terms of those absolute numbers. And as you can see, you know, the bulk of the number of counties is it tends to be above the state number. So those are the handouts that relate to the small city exemption on taxable income. The other ones just relate to the enterprise zone sections, which the dash 2 would strike from the bill anyway. But they do break down, as I think people were discussing before, how with the enterprise zones, we currently use covered payroll or average annual wage in a county times 150% to be the threshold for a business qualifying, not for the basic property tax exemption enterprise zone, but for these longer-term extended versions. The bill, as it has, would use the per capita income basis that the earlier part of the bill uses, which for most counties, as you can see, would lead to a drop, some more than others, of course, and that's hopefully what the graphic displays. And the last page just provides a little more detail on those covered payroll numbers that are the basis of the current requirement that would be maintained with the Dash 2 amendments. And with that, I would certainly invite questions.
Representative Gallegos has a question.
Yeah, I'd like to jump back to the compensation criteria. And I know previous testimony was just given about, you know, the desired income. You know, they're looking for like $15 an hour jobs, but currently it shows me that the average is like 18 for, like, in the example of being Morrow County, $18,000 a year is currently what the average income is, and they're looking to move that average up with this program to, say, you know, the $40,000.
Yes, the average covered payroll, which we list here, those are the numbers that come from the Employment Department, and those include all people with covered payroll, which means, you know, you're more or less covered by a regular W-2. So there's people out there earning money, self-employed, for instance, that are not covered, so to speak, under these numbers. But it includes everyone, wages, salaries. It's not just people earning a wage. And, yeah, there you can see, and, again, there's a few counties missing because they don't have enterprise zones that, you know, to matter. But, yeah, Morrow County, the wage is that $27,293. That would be the wage. And then the requirement for getting extra benefits in an enterprise zone is the $40,000 number. But that number you can add in your benefits. So it might be, you know, it might be like $20 an hour plus benefits that would make the grade for that, which 40,000 is a lot, but, you know, that's an average among all those employees.
Well, how do you make that jump? How's the, what's the plan to make that jump if you are currently only able to earn, you know, X dollars an hour? You can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, there needs to be extra skills. I mean, there, you need to.
Yeah. Well,
how do you make that jump?
Chair Smith, Representative Gallegos. I tried to make the point about high unemployment, but basically this is a situation where rising waters would float all boats. When 10% of the people who want a job in a county can't find a job, and they're competing for the jobs that there are, it depresses the wages for everybody in the county, unless the exceptions typically are people working for the Forest Service or the school district. But in terms of business-driven jobs, you find when you go to places with very high unemployment that everybody gets less, which is why I was suggesting that maybe we don't need a higher standard for those labor markets where there are more people than jobs. What we need to do is do what we can to incent the creation of jobs, and then as employment increases and soaks up that slack in the labor market, some of those 10% of the people who want a job get jobs, there'll be fewer people competing for the next job that comes up, and the market will drive up the price. That's, you know, I believe in the theory behind that, but additionally, have watched that work in Bend and other places in Oregon where when the minimum wage, I left Bend 5 years ago, but when I was there and the minimum wage went up, you couldn't hire people for 15 or 25 cents an hour more than that because there were enough people, there was not that much slack in the labor market, so all boats floated and people in general were getting paid more. That's what we're trying to accomplish here, I think.
One more fall.
Go ahead.
And that is how, I mean, hopefully we wouldn't be overlooking if to get these, they have to be able to show that they can provide those salaries. Would we overlook an employer who couldn't make those salaries but was in between and that he wouldn't qualify for these tax?
Well, let me make something clear. With respect to the enterprise zones, this compensation requirement for what people are annually paid plus benefits is something that the company that's getting the benefits must meet with its new workers if it wants to get extra years. The regular 3-year property exemption on new property in an enterprise zone is available regardless of worker pay, provided, you know, there's certain increase in jobs for any business that's eligible. The compensation standard comes into play for a company under aspects of the program that involve a longer exemption period, a 4 or 5 years or even a much longer term program that exists in rural areas too. So while the higher the number that a company has to reach, the more harder it is for, you know, a typical company maybe to get that. The idea is that those very extraordinarily well-paying employers might be that much further induced to go there if they can get extra benefits, whereas they might just scoff at the 3 years, for instance, which is the standard that most businesses use in these zones.
Chair Smith, Representative Gallegos, if I may. I don't know if that got entirely to your question, but the premise here is that there's a fairly significant incentive for businesses that will pay in this program. I'm not going to talk about enterprise zones, but in this program, there's a fairly significant incentive for businesses that will pay more than they otherwise would, more than is normal for that labor market. I think that's one of the biggest hurdles this program has to face, because why would you pay more than you have to unless this incentive's a big deal to you? So I think we'll never see a lot of businesses running to this program and paying more than they have to. More likely, what they pay for salaries and wages is going to be more costly to them than the benefit could replace. But the premise is that you don't get it unless you're over that threshold. So to answer your question is those firms would fall off the list and don't pay that level.
Thank you very much. I just might add to the committee, we are going to have an overview and informational meeting from these two gentlemen on Wednesday on enterprise zones and how they work and really get into the intricacies of it. So Representative March had a question.
Thank you. I also note that we're looking at two different kinds of figures, too. One is annual per capita income versus payroll compensation, which includes sick leave, health insurance, things like that. So there are two different numbers, kind of apples and oranges. I had a question about actual implementation of this and probably enterprise zones, in that we're dropping the number of jobs down to five. Are there any controls over, family employment? In other words, if I come in and I say I'm going to locate here and with five jobs, and if I had a large family, I could employ all my family members. And are there any controls over that?
Chair Smith, Representative March, the program does not use that as a criteria for making selections, so you could do that. But you have to pay them really well.
Yeah.
Well, I probably would.
Representative Hunt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was looking at the graph that is the effects of House Bill 2298, and it looks like, at least if I'm reading your chart correctly, there are at least a couple of counties that have enterprise zones that don't appear to be listed on this chart in terms of looking at the effects of the change. And Multnomah and Clackamas being two of those, at least as I'm reading this. Is that, am I misreading?
No. Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, members of the committee, I do exclude a few counties from the chart where the compensation standard is inapplicable. And for the urban zones in the Portland metropolitan area, they are not, a business is not subject to that for the extended abatement to 4 or 5 years. There's local requirements that can come into play, but I think the legislature noticed that Multnomah and Clackamas, at least Multnomah County especially, has very high wages, and it was just infeasible to make 150% of that for the types of jobs they were trying to attract, say, to the northeast quadrant of the city.
Additionally, the amendments would mean that this page is essentially irrelevant because they take out the implications vis-a-vis the enterprise zone, so it's really no longer relevant to the
-2.
Madam Chair, thank you. I think, though, you answered it a little bit, and I think all of us are operating under the base that we understand exactly what that new law did for enterprise zones and how this would change it. And I do think I, for one, need a little bit of an overview of the thinking behind the new law, how it's worked, if at all, so far. And so I guess we're going to do that.
We're going to do that Wednesday,
yes. Before we take any more action on this bill, that would take care of that. I do want to say that I echo Representative Marsh's concern about five employees, lowering it to that. I mean, that could be a gas station that would set up a shop there regardless of this and then be able to qualify it. And so
five well-paying gas station jobs.
Yeah.
Higher gas.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, there are the limitations in the small cities bill against, you know, being something that competes locally. So you'd have to be something that wasn't there already. So hopefully they have a gas station already. If they don't, maybe they need one.
Representative Mark?
Yeah. This follow-up on that. Does the department have authority to create administrative rules to prohibit, a business of all family members taking advantage of this?
Chair Smith, Representative Mark, yes, we do. I would consider that to be a stretch. If the legislature doesn't direct us in that way, I would think it would be a great extension of our authority, but we do have that authority.
Yeah, might consider some amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative March. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll see you on Wednesday. Is there anybody else who's here to testify on 2298, House Bill 2298? Well, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2298. And committee, we don't have anything further before us. We will meet back here Wednesday to have our overview on the economic development and for the enterprise zones. We're going to be seeing quite a few bills on those.
You can do that too.
Yes. Yeah.
For those of us who sat here, and this is our first look at enterprise zones and the complexities of this previous legislation, I would certainly appreciate more chance to look at. Half of what was said here was sort of only half sinking in, quite frankly, and I would like more of an overview on some of these complex.
That's why we're trying to do that, and we couldn't get it scheduled.
Wait till your third term. I'm over.
I was going to say, apparently the first termer would acknowledge that.
Yeah. No, I acknowledge it in the second term.
Be no further.
Did you want to note your plans for Friday? Did you already inform everybody?
Oh, on Friday I decided not to hold a committee hearing. Valentine's Day and Oregon's birthday, so I will celebrate. So we're adjourned.
All right.